Jewel. You don't need to know who I am, but you should know why I'm here. My grandpa, Stephen, is the author of a new exciting play called When the Break Happened in Orangeburg County. It's about our ancestors from when the break happened in 1865 until now. Many of my relatives are featured in the play, from my great-great-great-grandpa Stephen to my great-great-grandpa Stephen to my great-grandpa Stephen to my grandpa Stephen. Guess what my uncle and cousin's name are? Stephen. Go to www.thebreakinorangeburg.com to learn more. An online store has been created to honor those relatives and other families with products featuring the Break logo. Go to www.thebreakstore.com to purchase items today and help to produce this play, please.
Welcome to a new podcast show about stuff. It's the show about stuff, the Stephen Davis Show. Here's your host, Stephen Davis.
Yes, this is the show about stuff, the Stephen Davis Show. I hope your week was all good and positive. Today, we're going to examine the importance of charities, foundations, and nonprofits to the enriching of our existence here on this planet. To talk about this, we have two wonderfully informative persons. The first is Marilyn Ababio, who is the founder and executive director of Comfort Homesake in California, and LaCrystal Davis, who is the president of the Legacy Foundation, Inc. in Greensboro, North Carolina. Welcome to all of y'all.
Thank you. Thank you for having us.
Thank you so much for being here. As I generally do, and I want to start off the same way, because I want people to know who you are and where you came from. Okay, I'm going to go from the younger to the older this time. Let's start with you, LaCrystal. Where were you born at?
I was born and raised in Greensboro, North Carolina. I am a proud native. And to be specific, I was born and raised in the Dudley Heights community of Greensboro, North Carolina. I always have to acknowledge where I'm from, specifically in Greensboro.
I lived in Fayetteville when I was younger. And although I was from New York, my father was in military at Fort Bragg. How many brothers and sisters you have?
I have one sister and one brother. I'm the baby of the crew.
You're the baby. And where did you go to college at?
I went from the illustrious James Benson Dudley Senior High School, which is a historically Black high school. I graduated from there in 2001. And then I graduated from the North Carolina A&T State University in 2005.
What did you get your degree in?
Yes, my bachelor's is in social work. I recently graduated from Liberty University. I have my master's in counseling, and the concentration is life coaching.
Wow. I am born in St. John, New Brunswick in Canada.
You're a Canadian?
And I was raised in Lynn, Massachusetts, right outside of Boston.
Where did you go to school at?
High school. I went to Lynn Classical High School. And my family moved to California when I graduated high school. And so I did my undergraduate degree at UCLA. And then I did a program at Yale University in organization and management. I have my master's degree from Occidental in organizational planning.
Did you go to school with Barack Obama when he was there?
I'm older than him.
You said it. I did. So you went to UCLA when Kareem Abdul-Jabbar was there.
I think he was before me. I was there the year Angela Davis left as a teacher.
Yeah. Oh, really? And LaCrystal, after you left your graduation at A&T, what have you done?
When I graduated from A&T, I started off doing some substitute teaching. After that, I started working for the Communities and Schools program at High Point Central High School, which is in High Point, North Carolina. So with the Communities and Schools program, I was a student support specialist. Basically, I assisted students with college and career prep, life skills, and basic needs. I did that for 14 years before I left the school system and launched the Legacy Foundation.
What was your motivation in terms of choosing not only your course of study, but your course of life work?
I have a lot of things that contributed to me wanting to help young people. So I first knew that I wanted to help.
Yeah, that's an oxymoron because you young yourself.
When I was a junior at Dudley, that's when I first knew that I wanted to major in social work. There was a young lady that I knew who was a few years younger than me. And a lot of the decisions that she made just in school and different things of that nature, they were negative decisions and decisions that she probably would not have made had she had more influential people in her life. So just seeing her go through some of the things that she went through, that pulled at my heartstring and it made me want to help young girls. So that's when I knew I wanted to be a social worker. My senior year at North Carolina A&T, we had to choose an internship. And so I begged our instructor, I was like, can you please let me intern at Dudley? I really want to intern at Dudley. So under the internship, I interned with the Communities and Schools program at Dudley and I fell in love with it. So at that particular time, I told myself that I really didn't want to do social work anymore at that time. I thought about teaching, but I told myself if I were to do something similar to social work, I would want it to be within the Communities and Schools field. So it just so happened that the next year there was a position open at the school that I applied for, High Point Central. And like I said, I was there for 14 years. I resigned in June of last year.
Marilyn, I keep going back and forth with your name. Marilyn, what was your influence in terms of some of the things that you've done since you left UCLA in Occidental?
I've always wanted to fulfill a quest that I embraced as a teenager. And that had to do with exposing myself to the world. I had this sense that I wanted to see a lot of places, meet a lot of people, understand a lot about life and how things work. And so when I left, it started before, while I was attending UCLA, ever since I was 18, every summer I would drop my job and go somewhere in the world and then come back and get another job and do my courses. So when I left UCLA and I started my program at Yale, I did my thesis on international small business development. I found that my nature was both spiritual and akin to business. So I just followed my dreams of understanding systems and meeting people and seeing places.
The Army, because I know you were in the Army.
Yes, I guess it's the same thing. I was walking down the street one day. So I went into the recruiting office and I filled out a form and took a test. I guess I did well on the test because by the time I got home, the recruiter had called my house. My mother answered the phone, told my father. I had to explain that. I decided to go on and go. It's an institution. It's a place where I could get 3 square meals and they even paid you. So I was in the Army very young. Before I was 18, I was recruited. I graduated high school at 16. I was pretty young and I just went for the experience.
And how was it? I think the audience should know that it was during the time probably of the Vietnam War in that era.
It was during the time of the Vietnam War, during the time of the assassination of Malcolm X and the death of Martin Luther King. So I saw the racist side of the Army. I saw the regimen of the Army. I learned a lot about order in the Army, the hierarchy of the system. And I realized it really wasn't for me. It didn't really suit my personality. I'm really a creative person and I like to color outside of the lines. So I ended up leaving as soon as my hitch was up.
How did you get out of the Army? Were you discharged?
I got out honorably. And the GI benefit, it helped me with my education. It was a good thing. It was a good thing. And okay. I met one of my best friends there as well.
Brenda Patterson. Yeah. So when she sees this, we can say that we said her name. LaCrystal, I know that your time here is less than what Marilyn's time has been on Earth. So you have a more compressed time. When you decided to go into your field, who were some of the mentors that helped you along?
as far as with social work?
First, in deciding your course of action in terms of college, and then in terms of your career.
So I had a professor, her last name was Posey, my senior year at North Carolina A&T, and she was just really awesome. She was really supportive. So I would say that she was one of the ones that just kind of helped me my senior year just to sort through some things. My family has always been supportive in my college choices. And I think that's pretty much all I can think of right now, just my family and that particular professor. Yeah.
Tell me about your family, your mother and father.
I know, of course, you know this, but I'll share this with everyone. My dad was from Utahville, South Carolina. My family has been in Utahville since the American Revolutionary War. So we've been in Utahville since the 1700s. And one of my cousins, Myra Davis Brannick, she just wrote a book that talked about our family's history in Utahville since the 1700s, as well as her experience being a transplant in New York and coming down to South Carolina to visit. The book is so wonderful. It's exciting. It's called Cornbread My Soul, The Davis Family of Utahville, South Carolina. But even though it was written to preserve the Davis family history, it's a book for everyone. Again, our family, we can trace our roots all the way back to the 1700s. My family still lives in Utahville on land that my great-grandparents purchased so that their descendants could have a place to always call home.
Now, you had a very famous, well-known relative. Was that your father or was it a cousin?
Cousin, actually. So the Davis family, our roots are very complex. And what I mean by that is I can tell you a descendant of my great grandfather's, one of his siblings. I can tell you one of his siblings is a descendant. The cousin that you're referring to is my cousin, Charlie Davis. His grandmother and my great-grandfather, they were siblings. They were two of 13 children born to my great-grandparents, Jacob and Bessie Davis, who were former slaves. But yes, Charlie Davis, he was an exercise jockey for the famous Secretariat, who was a Triple Crown winner in 1973. There was a 25-year gap between him and the Triple Crown winner before him, which I believe may have been Citation. I think that was like in 1948. So, and he also worked with another racehorse, Arriva Ridge.
I remember being in New York at the day that the Belmont Stakes was written. It's like New York came to a standstill to see what Secretariat was going to do. And then he, as they say, he kicked butt.
He's been able to beat his record at Belmont Stakes, I believe. I don't think no one has been able to beat his record since then.
Yeah, 18 and a half lengths. Continue.
So that's pretty much on my dad's side. My mom was from Clinton, North Carolina, which is about an hour and 40 minutes away from Greensboro, but you're familiar with Clinton. And so my mom's side of the family, they came to Greensboro back in the 60s. Greensboro was a place that if you were from North Carolina or South Carolina during like the 60s, if you didn't want to travel north or be so far away from home, Greensboro was like the place that you could go to have a better life as far as jobs and different things of that nature without being so far away from home. My mom, her mother, and her brother, and her niece and nephew, they ended up in Greensboro in the early 60s. My dad came to Greensboro in 1969. They met in 81 and had me in 83, and the rest is history. Since then, both my parents have transitioned, but I still just try to remember the things that they instilled in me. My mother, she also plays a big part as far as my passion for education because she was a stay-at-home mom. She taught me how to read. I've been reading since I was 2.5. She was really big on education, making sure that I had everything that I need. So just that seed planted in me is harvested and is, I guess, my way of not giving back, but being the fact that she instilled that in me, it just comes naturally for me to want to help in educating others. Also, I would attribute my great-grandparents, Jacob and Bessie Davis, when they started to own land in Utahville, they gave a portion of the land to the community so that the kids in the community could have a school. That's another avenue in which I have that passion for education. They felt school was important, that just trickled down. So on the Davis side of the family, you'll see a lot of my family members are in education. education, but again, I guess we just get it honestly. So if it hadn't been for them giving the land for the kids to go to school, in which their kids and grandkids benefited from, then the kids would not have had a place to be educated.
On my Williams side, they started off in Cowcastle, which became Bowman, and they moved to Orangeburg. Back in the early 1900s, the founder of Sears and Roebuck started putting up schools in the South, but he would team up with Black folk because the schools were for Black folk. My grandfather donated the land for one of the schools in that area. So I understand what you're saying. Now, Abavio, you're out of the Army. You're not kicked out of the Army. You are honorably discharged. And then where do you go?
I came back to Los Angeles, and that's when I started at UCLA.
Okay. And then you graduated.
I graduated, and I won a fellowship, the National Urban Fellows. I became a National Urban Fellow. And through that program, I did my graduate work, and I was placed with a mentor, the then mayor of Newark, New Jersey, where I worked for Mayor Ken Gibson for several years. And I also worked in Washington, D.C. at a think tank called the Joint Center for Political Studies. I really have to express gratitude for the African-American men and the community that embraced my youth, embraced my naivete, and really taught me a lot about politics and business.
And you worked for somebody else that was well known.
Well, I worked for her because I admired her so much. I was actually in my kitchen cooking when my neighbor, Portia Perry Dempsey, called me to come over to her house. And when I walked in the door and I saw the great, the magnificent, the beautiful Shirley Chisholm, I was at her feet. She was so kind, and it seemed that she and Portia had been friends for many years. Portia picked me. They talked to me for a while, and I didn't really realize then it was an interview. But they told me when after an hour or so that they wanted me to help Shirley with her initiative, the National Political Caucus of Black Women. This is what she started after her run for the presidency. Mm-hmm. And I told her I would be honored to carry her briefcase. And that I did.
Her office was about three blocks from where I live at right now. I remember going to her office quite a few times and talking to her. And she told me that she always wanted to be a concert pianist. That was her passion, being a concert pianist. So that actually shows that politics goes along with the culture. It goes along with healthcare. It goes along with so many other things in terms of making our life enriching. But in the end, it's those nonprofits that adds the flavor to making life so much better. And that we're going to get into that in terms of what you all are doing. But you're only at 20 something years old now. You got a long way to go in terms of what you've done.
I think when I was in my 30s, or 40. And I worked with her for about 5 years. And this does bring me into the aspect of why the nonprofit. During that time, one of my children was diagnosed with cancer. And the years that we spent caregiving him and his subsequent death, it's the reason why we started the nonprofit. Life just took that path and made that turn for me. I'm going to say for me, excuse me, because I had the opportunity to see an entirely different side of life. The nonprofit sector is different than the for-profit and the government sector. And so I saw that part of life and I just embraced it. We created Comfort Homesick. When I say we, my family, we got together and created Comfort Homesick, something of a legacy for that child. He passed away at 20 years old. And some of the men at his memorial service, they made statements about his character and his poise during the illness and about how much of an example that he set And we were very proud of him. And what the nonprofit is designed to do is to help families and individuals avoid what we went through with the healthcare system, that well-intended system that really supported him the 7 years that he was battling cancer. They did not have a mechanism. They did not have communication enough to help us understand that my son was actually transitioning from good health to end of life. And so we were there, we were blind, we didn't understand, and we could have done so much more for that beautiful young man as he transitioned from this world to the next, had we understood what was happening to him. And so he passed away in the intensive care unit, plugged up to machines in the very way that I would not have wanted. And fortunately, my family rallied and we were around him and making prayers as he did transition, but he could have been home, he would have been happier. And so Comfort Home Sake is committed to increasing national awareness about how we get to that point, national awareness about aging and end-of-life care through education, training, research, and consulting.
Now, LaCrystal, there is a difference between a foundation, a nonprofit, and charities, and you chose to do a foundation. What was your thinking when you were doing that?
So mine is actually a nonprofit, but it just has it works because we're giving young ladies the opportunity to create a legacy with that foundation, that playing field that will cause them to be able to create a legacy. So that's just the name. But I know that can throw people off, but yes, we're actually a 501c3 nonprofit.
But you give grants to these young ladies?
Basically, some of the assistance that we've given to the young ladies is we have, at the beginning of the year, we did a back to school drive to make sure that our young ladies had all the tools they need so they could be successful this school year. We also assist them with college application fees so that the young ladies will be able to turn in their college applications in a timely manner. We run off of donations. That's our main thing. We run off of donations. So we had someone to donate, to go out and purchase 2 laptops for our young ladies and any type of need that they may have. We also, too, we help to pay off an account balance, a college account balance for one of our young ladies as well. So any type of barrier that may present itself, again, we run off of donations to make sure that the young ladies do not have to carry that barrier or that burden alone. So basically, we remove any financial barrier so that they can be successful. Okay. But that's not all that we do. That's just a portion of what we do with the Legacy Foundation.
You got the floor right now.
Foundation, our goal is to start working with college-bound young ladies their senior year in high school and to stay with them up until the age of 25. We just launched in July of 2020. We're still a new nonprofit, but so far we have 2 programs and our goal is to have a 3rd program. So our first program is the STAR program, and that's where we work with our senior girls that are in high school. And we basically walk with them from SAT, ACT prep, college applications, financial aid, scholarships, helping them to apply for housing and orientation so that when they get ready to enroll in school in fall, everything is set. So that's our goal, to walk with them their senior year in high school. Our goal program, we work with college undergraduates. And again, since this is our first year, we have a freshman group this year. So with our freshman group, we do life skill workshops and different things of that nature. And with our STAR program, we also did workshops with them. The goal is for them to, the freshman girls, to stay with us so they can move into their sophomore year. Their sophomore year, we'll do a whole different type of life skills workshop with them. The goal is for the girls in the STAR program to transition into the GOLD program when they become freshmen. Keep adding every year so they can basically each group can stay with their cohort. So when they graduate college, our goal is to keep them for another 2 to 3 years. We want to do life skills with them because now after you graduate from college, it's a whole nother ball game. So helping them to transition from college into early adulthood. And within that time frame, we'll do workshops based off of financial literacy, financial management, as well as homeownership. That will be our third program, which we haven't had a name yet because we hadn't gotten there far yet.
You have to crawl before you walk.
Yes.
And
then
you have to walk before you run.
Yes. And our mission is to provide programs that will produce college, career, social, and financial readiness in the lives of the young ladies that we serve. And our vision is to empower our young ladies in creating a legacy of generational wealth.
How do you choose which young ladies that you do all this wonderful stuff for?
The only requirement is that the young lady is college bound, whether it's 2-year college or 4-year college. So what we did last year, I just put it out on Facebook and just let Facebook do the work for me.
That seemed to have worked out quite well for you, huh?
Yes, yes. So we have, so far we have 9 girls in our STAR program and 9 girls in our GOAL program. So yes, that's a good number for us starting off. Yes.
Now back to Maryland. I like going back and forth because you all don't talk as long. Not that you are long talkers. People sometimes get a little bit bored by just one person talking for half an hour. To you, Marilyn, what are some of the things that you do in your organization? What are the things that you want to do? And I will ask this question of each of one of you. Let's start with that question, Marilyn.
Yes. We named the organization Comfort Homesake. That's like comfort at home for the sake of God. And over the years, we established in 2002. So we're a more mature organization and we are a recognized leader in advanced healthcare planning. We have a dashboard that we started in 2017. We have records that we have trained 1,314 people in advanced healthcare planning. We have completed 494 advanced directives among communities of color. And we have provided 36 instances of No One Dies Alone service, where we actually go in and we sit with an individual, excuse me, who is transitioning. So our organization has been diligent in terms of our work of training and educating and providing some direct services. We've been doing that, as I said, for 15 years or so. We wrote the study and were instrumental in the establishment for Alameda County in Northern California, their establishment of something called the Getting the Most Out of Life program and the Care Partners program. Comfort Homesake was directly involved in establishing those programs which support people who are managing a chronic disease, who have a serious illness, or are facing end of life. Right now, at this point, we are launching in our social media campaign. We have a national strategy now that we're just starting to implement. And so we're asking your listeners and the audience to please go on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, LinkedIn, and like us. At comforthomesake.com is our website. We want to grow, excuse me, and we want to sustain our unique ability to provide culturally relevant advanced care planning conversation. And what do I mean by advanced care planning? Those words are meaningless to a lot of people who haven't heard it before. When we are at any stage, after we reach maturity at 18, anything can happen to us. We can become unconscious. We could contract a disease. We could get hit by a car. I'm not trying to be negative, but I am trying to face the realities of life. And completing something called an advanced directive is a form in which you would put your wishes, the wishes for your health care, just as I described. In my own experience, this advanced directive, and they're available in every state, will allow you to say whether you want to, if you died a natural death, would you want to be resuscitated? If you had to be on life support, would you want to be on life support? If so, for how long? Would you want to get blood transfusions? What kind of medicines would you want to avoid? It's just decision-making. And the most important thing that happens with an advanced directive is that you get to choose someone to make those decisions for you if you're unable to speak. And of course, if you ask someone to be your advocate in that way, then that person really should understand you, should understand your wishes and why you want certain things and why you don't want certain things if you were hospitalized or sick. And so this, having that conversation, these are difficult conversations. People don't want to talk about this. But it's important because once we're hospitalized, these are the questions that we're asked. And so we need to be prepared. And so Comfort Homesake, the training that we do, we stop the conversation before we talk about an advanced directive because we need to understand deeply what these decisions mean. And because they're life and death decisions, we try to approach it in a culturally relevant way. Certain words are not said in certain communities. Some decisions are made by the individual. Some cultures make decisions in community or by family. So we have these things called compassionate principles. We understand that when we start our training, that those people who do the training for Comfort Homesake, if they understand suffering, then when we talk about suffering with others, compassion can arise. The right words can inspire people and restore communication and make somebody happy right away, no matter what their situation is. We're not perfect. Often we produce thoughts that we need to, they're bad thoughts, and we might say bad things. But it's important to take action and to say, I'm sorry, I had that bad thought, and I'd like to replace that thought with this, so that people can embrace compassion, they can embrace forgiveness. We want to try to make life better for people. That's our ultimate goal. And as we embrace this idea of telehealth, we want to try to shift the needle from the status quo to a more profound look at our attitudes and our actions that affect our lives and that affect the lives of the people around us for years and years around the difficulties of trauma, loss, and grief, just how these elements impact our lives and impact the lives of others. We are trying to teach people and support people as they cope.
Unfortunate, we do get sick and we do die. This was not meant to be a morbid show. It's just to present information for people to be able to react in their lives. And I thank you for the words that you said. I also think of a difference between, I won't say you, Marilyn, I'll say me and LaCrystal, is that when we talk about these things, I remember just the other day, seeing somebody and they were in their 80s. And you say, oh man, that's an old person. And then you say, damn, I'm just right a quarter from that. I need to know these things that you're talking about. Of course, when you're younger, those things can happen to you, but the actuary is that you're going to live much longer than somebody that's pretty close to 80.
Even let me tell you, our organization is multi-generational. So we have some 30-year-olds who work with us. And when they do the training, it looks a lot different because they talk about living a healthy life. That's the promise, that if you exercise, you do your spiritual work, you eat right, you keep a happy disposition, and then, you know, your life is going to go better.
And that's the difference again between young and old. When you're old, you say, I eat whenever I want because I might not be around for much longer. Let me have that last rib. Now, Crystal, what is your vision and where you see your organization moving from 2020, say 10 to 15 years from now?
Yes.
What is your
Yes, 10 to 15 years from now, of course, we will have a lot more girls that have came through our organization. But I would love for it to be that the young ladies that we have helped thus far in the organization and our young ladies that are coming, going to come up in the future, I would love to see them be a part of our organization where they could be a potential hires in the future, or just them giving back to the organization as far as donations, as far as being guest speakers, and as far as being employees of the organization. I would also love to own a building. That way, the young girls could have somewhere to come after school. We can do our workshops and different things after school. Hopefully, the Legacy Foundation in the next 10 to 15 years will be a multi-million nonprofit so that we can make sure that we could serve more young ladies within our community.
Is there a national plan to this in the back of your head?
I could even see the Legacy Foundation going international. I could see it going across seas.
I saw some article the other day where... Oh, yeah. It was an article about a young lady who came over from Liberia because they had the war that was going on in Liberia. So she came here, and I think she's in her late 20s, early 30s, or something like that. I had to sit and wonder, because the article was about her having $200 million worth of property in that short period of time. So what I'm saying in saying that is that your goals is very sound. And the thing that one has to do is lay the groundwork. You develop the idea and then develop a way to reach those goals along the way. And sometimes you got to, if you reach those goals faster, you have to push them back a little bit further, because you can never be without goals, no matter how long it's been. You have this goal, you made $1 billion. Now I'm ready to make $5 billion and I'm ready to do something like this. I commend you in terms of the Legacy Foundation. Again, how can people get in contact with you? And do you do public speaking?
Individuals can get in contact with me through a few different ways. The first way is through our email address. Our email address is thelegacyfoundationinc@gmail.com. So that's our email address. Again, thelegacyfoundationinc@gmail.com. We are also on social media. We are on Facebook, The Legacy Foundation, Inc. And we are on IG or Instagram as well, The Legacy Foundation, Inc. So those are the three different ways that individuals can get in contact with us. And yes, I do guest speaking as well. The basis of my guest speaking is based off of college prep. So yes.
Marilyn, you took us to what your passion is right now in terms of your organization, but what skills did you develop in previous times, in previous employments, that have helped you develop the skill to be the executive director of this organization?
Thank you for that question. The skill. I learned proposal writing. I learned something about how interests can come together to create partnerships that can create organizational development and investment. I would like to point out that nonprofits, there's a myth that nonprofits should not make a profit, which is not true, that sustainability requires that nonprofits do find a way to increase their worth and their value. So we need to be mindful that we need to generate a source of income. I owned a for-profit business for many years, and so the idea of contracting is also a very comfortable concept for me, and I would encourage all nonprofit leaders and directors to figure out a way to sustain their work. Again, making grants and developing partnerships, sometime creating a product that people can purchase, and donations, a good campaign. So this is something that every nonprofit should think about. Other skills, I think that the fact that I have a foundation that's based in a spiritual presence, that we embody to a degree this idea that we should talk about those things that make us uncomfortable in a loving way, in a way that exhibits kindness and compassion. so that people at every age can have a chance to talk about their heart's desires, to talk about living well, to talk about the importance of creating a world that is better for all of us.
I have to tease you at this point because I heard that Massachusetts accent.
I was up in the Bay Area and I would always say BOT, the transit system up there. Yeah, that accent. So I'd like to talk about contacting Comfort HomeSite. We're looking for volunteers. We're recruiting volunteers right now. info@comforthomesake.com. comforthomesake.com. That's how to reach us. We're on Facebook, Instagram. You can check out our website, comforthomesake.com. And we'd be happy to share all that we have. And as I said, we are recruiting for volunteers right now to help us grow and embrace our telehealth.
And what can the public do to help you besides give money?
Investing in the Legacy Foundation is very important. We have a PayPal account and we are www.paypal.me/thelegacyfoundinc. So that's where we are with our PayPal and with our Cash App. We are $ the Legacy Foundation. So again, yes, investments are very important. And we are always looking for guest speakers to talk to our young ladies. So yes, just guest speakers and invest. The root of why I started the Legacy Foundation was because I wanted young ladies, no matter her background, that when she grows up and starts her family, I want her to be able to have access to resources of other young ladies that may not have had the same background that she had growing up. So I just wanted them to have the same opportunities. That's why the Legacy Foundation was created.
So now I'll start with you, Liv Crystal. Your final word, anything else you want to say?
Anyone that invests in the Legacy Foundation, you will be making a great investment. Again, we cover college applications, we cover scholarships, we cover book vouchers, just different things of that nature. And to tell you all about our outcomes, because even though we're still a baby, we've had a lot of great outcomes this year. Just looking at our STAR program, which again is our high school program, we have 9 young ladies. Within the 9 young ladies, we have a total of 25 college acceptance letters. We have $95,000 that was offered in scholarships to the young ladies. And we also have 4. We had 4 honor programs offered at the colleges. So those are just the outcomes that the young ladies have been able to achieve thus far under the Legacy Foundation. So we're making moves.
Now, are the speakers that you are always looking for, are they only female speakers, or is there anything a male could offer your program?
Thus far, we have only had women guest speakers, but a lot of our topics I've already planned. I try to find people within the community that would best fit the topics for our young ladies. But as our young ladies that are freshmen, as they transition into their sophomore year, junior year, senior year, we'll forever be looking for guest speakers based off of the topic. I've done some planning for next year and I have some guest speakers. Yeah, we'll see. I'm not opposed to having male guest speakers.
Okay, you got the floor.
Okay, I've got the floor. I do want to thank you for giving me and Comfort HomeSake the opportunity to talk to your audience. I want to remind the audience that we are recruiting for volunteers and we would love to have more male participation. We do have a couple of very dynamic men who are on our board of directors. Mr. Ali Sharif, he is a music and communication specialist in New York, as well as Mr. Raymond Sales, who is an attorney up in Ohio. And I mention these two men because they have made a really important contribution to our organization in as much as they are helping us to transform from a strictly in-person organization where we did all of our training in person into a telehealth technologically advanced organization moving forward. So this COVID environment, it allowed us to be able to begin the transition from in-person to online. And I'm very happy to know that the myth, again, around seniors not having access to internet and phones is not true. And for you seniors who are listening out there, please go ahead and get your tablet, like us on Facebook, learn more about communicating via the internet. It's not that hard. You can do it. And we'd like to see you on that side of life. We do intend to continue our in-person care as the pandemic is conquered and we all get back to something near normal. So again, thank you for the time today. And I ask people again to support our mission to increase national awareness around aging and healthcare planning, making the best choice for you and your family. We're here to help.
As a closing fact, I wanted to make sure that I do let people know the differences between foundations, nonprofits, and public charities are like the American Red Cross. Foundations, you can have a public foundation and a private. Foundations generally don't do the work. It's the nonprofits that do the work because they get the monies from the foundations to do the work. And on private foundations, it's usually a family or a corporation that put monies into that foundation for a specific purpose to be followed. You all are at the grassroots level. The foundations are not doing the work. You all are doing the work, and we applaud you for that. And I just wanted to make sure that our audience know that those are the differences. And that's why it's important, not just for the two of you, they're various nonprofits in the world doing things, and it's a very competitive atmosphere. Okay, go ahead.
I just wanted to thank the foundations that support Comfort Homesafe, the Archstone Foundation and the Stubsky Foundation. They have been supportive of our work, and I would be remiss if I didn't thank them at this time.
Okay. Again, I do thank you all so much for being on this show today. And please, my audience, please go out, help them as they help you. From your side, LaCrystal, it's the future. From your side, Marilyn, it's a bad time, but it's a necessary time. It's a transition time. We all need help in this world. So I do thank you all so much in terms of that. So that's the end of my show for today, the show about stuff, the Stephen Davis Show. I do thank you all for tuning in, and join us next week for another wonderful topic.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Thank you for tuning in this week. Hope you enjoyed this show about stuff. See you next time.
The Break Store. Unique branded gifts for the holidays, birthdays, or just because. Visit us at www.thebreakstore.com. Hit the right black get in touch button.